All right, we're going to get started on the last half of the reading. Those who have poets, I know a lot of poets out here that, Kay, I'd like to see you read here once in a while. Michael, I'd like you to come up here once in a while. I think it's important because you get to try something that, you know, and I always feel this way. A lot of times, you know, when I write something, I need a sounding board. And, you know, you call your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your mom, and that's what you do. You can write a great poem, but it's nice when you can read it, and you can share it with somebody. And there's no bad in what you write. So just come on up and give it a try, and don't ever be afraid of it, because I'll protect you, I promise. Nobody's going to hurt you. Hey, Virgil, you taking off already, huh?
I'll be back.
When, next week? See you, Virgil. Bye-bye. Thank you. All right, I'll see you there. Bye-bye. Bye. All right, the first reader we have today is Bonita Penn. That just sounds like a poet name. Bonita Penn. Man, that's a... That name is a poem in itself. Come on up here, Bonita.
Okay, this is called The Joneses. Have-nots always talking about what they have. Not saying they don't have, but you know what the hell I'm talking about. Them always having, not saying the have-nots are not worthy of having. You know what I'm talking about. Stop talking so damn loud on the bus about what you about to have, what you think you about to have, while I write poems on the train in my head, while I wonder why so many cars in the parking lot are black, silver, or white. And why do teenage boys crave so much attention? Having to have orange, green, and Jordans doing the Michael Jackson moonwalk, having to dance before they can sit down. And I just know I will heave if I have to be politically polite while it's tax refund time, and the have-nots are in the back screaming about what they about to have, and my salary's been frozen for 3 years.
That's pretty good. All you had to do is put a couple have-nots with a couple wannabes. Wow, you'd add something. Renee Aldrich. Renee, where you at? Come on. Renee got mad and left. Where you at? Come on up here. Come on. That's a cool name, but not eager. Not eager. Gotcha.
Thank you. Thank you. So, appreciate this opportunity. I just have like two little poems. This first poem is about the first guy I ever wanted to marry. And I promise I didn't do this, but I was going to do it anyway, but... 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Singing as we walk down the street. Daddy, what's a company store? His hand so large covering mine represented safety and security for me. Like an iguana in a green and brown forest, I was lost in his love in those days. He'd come from Cleveland in a pink and white 1955 Ford Fairlane. It brought light to the cement sidewalk outside the blue-gray three-story house at 2127 Tustin, a signal to the neighbors, Renee's dad's in town. He seemed gigantic to my 7-year-old 4-foot-2 frame. He lived 2 whole hours away, but it seems like I saw him every day. When I woke up, when I went to sleep. When I fell once and hit my head on a 1948 metal bumper, as fast as the knot welled up in my head, and he had me scooped up. And we were sitting those endless hours on the hard brown benches in the sad and dreary Children's Hospital ER. He was there on Christmas morning, on Easter morning, the day before school started. He'd stand with his hands on his hips, looking down at me, and again I'd get lost in his love. 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. I owe my soul to the company store. And just this, I just had a class with Jan Beatty and I learned how to do this. So I thought I'd try it. I wrote something, and this is after Celeste Gainey. I would never have done this prior to this class. Denzel is sitting in his chair labeled director, watching everyone posturing themselves for their scene. I walk to and fro trying to figure out exactly where I fit. An extra. That's not very much, but maybe it is. I'm dressed in tight-ass Gloria Vanderbilt black jeans, black and white, 4-inch heels, V-neck, gold lamé top, and I'm stuck here all day. The others around me sputter and fume like broken engines, chomping at the bit for that one word, action. I feel lonely. I long for Denzel to notice me. That's the fantasy I came here to pursue. Maybe his 25-year marriage is just a ruse. Maybe I'm the one he missed out on. I see us on the cover of Ebony. The banner reads, Denzel finds his soul. This dream swallows me whole after I'm chewed up. Where was I when he was looking for love? Somewhere sucking up to some 90-pound weakling trying to find popularity behind the bleachers. Quiet on set, he shouts, Antoine Fisher is looking for his mama. Wants to know why she didn't want him. Why did his foster mom and sister abuse him? Why did a 7-year-old have to go down on a 25-year-old slut and be called a nigga by her mother? Denzel will figure it out. I'm just an extra here, languishing in my dream. Thanks.
Good fun stuff, man. All right. Pretty good, man. Jan Beatty taught you how to do that, huh? That little Dickens. Got to watch that Jan Beatty. All right. Michelle Albright. Where are you at, Michelle?
Michael?
No, this is Michelle. I'm sorry.
If I'd have known I was going to have to follow that, I might not have signed up tonight. Just terrific. I can't sing, so I'm not going to try. When I first read this poem at the workshop, it was called Ithaca, and everybody seemed a little confused by the title. So I changed it, and now it's called The Sack of Ithaca, to make it much clearer. And yes, I know that didn't happen in the poem, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. My dad used to like to chase fires. When we heard the alarms, off we sailed to find the source. Once we pulled up in time to see someone's home in full blaze, screaming children spread out on the lush Florida lawn. Now you'd never get that close, but this was long ago, before everything was safe and under control. Another time we followed the siren song, ending up a block away from our first house here, when I was 2, but still remembered when I was 10. So vivid, so pink that little house was, where I nearly drowned in a wading pool. My dad backed over my new red trike, and that teenage babysitter, my God, my God, my God, I still can't say what she did to me. I still remember it now, or I remember remembering the memory of it. A thin strip of asphalt was all that separated the square moss-dappled bungalows from the scrub-brush pine barren now involved. Having not yet seen the news of napalm, I had never known treetops in flame, and while the fire burns so hot and wild, I could only think of the ancestral home, the bike, the pool, the young girl's skin, how for 8 long years all I had thought about was the chance of seeing it once again. Now would I watch it all just burn? The trucks were hosing down the road, so they eventually asked us to move on, but not before we watched a line of men with tanks on backs and masks on faces, spraying flame, cheating the fire of its fuel, creating a path it could not cross. See that, son? They're creating a backfire. That's what's called fighting fire with fire. But it's all ancient history now, back when I could still be amazed by all the things he seemed to know. Thank you.
Michael, that was pretty good. Where do we get Michelle up here? She's going to be. All right. Next one is Sherry, Governor. Sherry? I was tricking you. Barry, get on up here. Barry's my buddy.
Yeah, we all know it's all about searching for the word, just that right word. So I thought one search might go like this. Breeze. We were dead calm in the water, jib and mainsail drooping. Then from the east, a fragrant zephyr, a hint of strengthening wind. No. What? A zephyr is a gentle breeze, yes, but it comes from the west. It's right here in American heritage. Zephyr, a west wind, a gentle breeze. We were dead calm in the water, jib and mainsail drooping. Then a fragrant catspaw brushed my brow, gave visions of full sails, white on blue. Wait. What? What now? This boat, is it on a lake, a bay, an ocean? Who cares? It's a boat. Well, you see, again from heritage, a catspaw, you did say catspaw, is a light breeze that ruffles small areas of a water surface. So can a catspaw be on an ocean, or say Lake Superior? Or would it take more than a light breeze to ruffle those waters? We were dead in the water, jib and mainsail drooping, when a gale grabbed the jib, set the mainsail into full motion, the telltale fluttering, no, again, no. Couldn't be a gale, too strong. Sails would rip or mast would fracture. Heritage says very strong, 32 to 64 miles per hour. Too much for the Flying Dutchman, let alone. Yeah, I get it. How about Mistral? Can I say, a Mistral filled the mainsails. Mistral, dry, cold, from the north, blows in squalls, brief, sudden, violent. In other words, a Mediterranean gale. Sorry. So there we were, on Pimatuni, our sunfish bobbing fore and aft, waiting for any whiff of wind, a draft, any current from a flurry, something would take hold, waft away our worries, something that might spank the sails, send us on our way. Then a breeze, a fresh fall breeze, a brash breeze, a breeze bringing the boat to full sail, a breeze bouncing us above the forming whitecaps, a steady breeze blowing in our faces, bringing us about, bringing an end to dead calm doldrums, taking us anywhere our hearts desired. Breeze, I thought. Breeze. What a great word.
Barry, that was a lot of fun. One of my favorite poets around, Nancy Esther James. Come on up here, Nancy.
I'm going to read two poems, and you will hear what they have in common. The first one is, the title is This Mystery Girl, and it reads into the poem. This mystery girl in the old unlabeled photo should be my mother, edging toward puberty, body lost in rumpled midi dress, arms behind her back. Perhaps only sunlight bleaches her hair too blonde, squints her eyes, provokes the protest plain in the troubled face. A few years later, another snapshot. The family's eldest child in white summer dress, she stands on a porch above three seated siblings. Her left hand curls around a post. Her right arm rests in folds of skirt. Dark hair frames the heart-shaped mane that will mature to cooler gaze in photos yet to come. Already she has learned how to pose for best effect, how to make up her face. And the second poem, Brown Photos to My Mother. Young, I never knew you. Esther, one of the girls who climbed a tent pole, clowning for bloomered buddies, posed risque with them in sheet sarongs. Esther of brown photos, coy in stocking swim dress or soulful in sentimental gown. Then a domestic shot, Esther in cropped and yellowed square, mother with young boy at grandpa's camp. And so young still, I did not know you. The youth you lived before me looks out from the studio portrait of a beautiful stranger, the eyes, transparencies of hope. That one, too, brown, before I knew it. Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy. Sheila Kelly.
Good. Thank you, Don. Work. My mother watches me from the window throw snow as soft as spun sugar all afternoon. An acre of it. Spoon by spoon, by arc of shovel and arched back. She remembers thrust of muscles, pull and sweat, abdominal clutch and heave in wave on wave, ecstatic ache, release of something falling soft, veins full of heat. I forgot to look back at her fading face, behind a window watching, fogged with breath. My own seeing steamed behind glasses, misted winter from weary breath into my scarf. It was then my son appeared, wide-eyed, long-limbed, all sinew. He leapt out, smashed the thin line open with his sunny yellow head, his shoulders born to dig my grave, the dirt.
All right, two Sheilas hitting home runs tonight. You guys are like tough, tough, tough. Thank you. My favorite. Come on up here, Lucille Siebert. Come on up here, buddy.
Turtle song. You shouldn't have. Are you crazy? My mother voices her thoughts in my head all the way home the day I bought 32 stone turtles. Nancy says women spend money on the anniversary of an injury. She says I couldn't help it. The stone turtles are arranged in small groups on a table in my upstairs sitting room. It has been chosen as the perfect place for spirits of living turtles to congregate. Very few humans are capable of hearing turtle song. No one, to my knowledge, has been able to translate it. I heard their heart-rending cry late one night. It was garbled, but I was able to interpret. I arrived at the way station. I arrived with my wad of bills at the way station where stone turtles were being detained. After discreet communication, money changed hands. I have been given the sacred task of spreading this story to those whose hearts are pure, who can see beyond the dense vibrations of this material world. They have established themselves in my upstairs sitting room. They may be planning their epic journey, a very long, possibly dangerous journey to an island unknown to man. It has long been their custom to celebrate in turtle song spring and autumn equinoxes. It is a chanting taking hours to complete. Summer solstice turtle song reaches an ecstatic, fevered pitch of joyful celebration. So may 12,000 turtles begin their amazing journey to their longed-for island paradise. Their planet is an island in a sea of merry stars, singing their turtle song forever in ecstasy. Thank you.
Stuff up here, man, ain't I? You know, it's always fun to get up here, and it's always fun to get to kind of have, get to show off. You get to read your stuff, and I like it. I really do. And I like all you guys, and I appreciate what you guys do to keep it alive. It's always good to have an audience. I mean, you can only, you know, you read to your girlfriends or boyfriends so often, you know. So get up here and don't be afraid of it. I will never let anything happen to you. All right, I'm the good cop. The bad cop. The bad cop won't let happen anything to you either, right? Right, bad cop?
He's good.
And don't be afraid of poem. My life is poetry. It really is. I live everything. It's always, I'm always looking. I'm always listening. I like the language. All kinds of language. I like people with club feet. People with hair lips. You know, I like that. I love people when I love people. You crazy. You crazy. I would do this for real. I would do that by, you know, you think you're somebody, you know, you're nobody. But you can do that. Have fun with poems. Don't be afraid once in a while to scratch your ass. You know, it's not a bad thing. Nobody's going to probably do it for you. The other day I wrote about, you know, never mind. No. But this goes to Jan Beatty. She's not here, so she can't defend herself. The art of the jockey strap. Not many people know, and most would be afraid to ask, but not my friend Yoey Girl, because she ain't afraid of nothing. And she asked, can you tell me about putting on a jockey strap? I said, what? She said, can you tell me about putting on a jockey strap? I said, what do you mean? Is there an art or a manual that teaches a man to putting on a jockey strap? I said, well, I don't think there's a manual, but I'm sure it's an art. Yoey said, well, how is it an art? I said, well, it's kind of a passage of rite handed down, I think, from the Greeks. It's an art taught by a father to his son, or his grandfather to his grandson, or maybe a priest or a rabbi handed down. It's like a bar mitzvah or a confirmation, or when a boy is taught to go hunting in the woods alone, or taught to drive, or first cigar or first beer, or learns to tie a necktie, or when a boy first kisses a girl, kind of an unspoken passage. She said, what do you mean? Well, when a boy is given his first jockey strap, he's recognized as a young man. You see, it's the first time that he grows peach fuzz on his little walnuts, and the father must tell him all the important things. What kind of important things? I said, well, for one, how to put it on. It doesn't seem hard to put on a jockey strap. Ha ha! That's where you're wrong. It's an art. First thing you got to learn is that the little patch goes in the front. Because many a boy unschooled would put the patch in the back and kind of look like a horse pulling a junk wagon. The second thing is that the boy would be taught is to sit down and put the jockey strap on and make sure that you don't get it caught on his foot. Because if you get the jockey strap caught on your foot, you can be launched just like an arrow. I mean, the strength of a jockey strap can fire you maybe 18, 20 feet into the air, just like an arrow. And if you're sitting in it on a and even if you're sitting on a chair, you can be launched head over heels. My father told me that he was at the Lyceum with my Uncle Benny, and my uncle was standing up on one foot and kind of hopping. Well, he caught his foot on the strap and ping, he was shot maybe 25 feet in midair, straight out the second story window, and landed in a rose bush with a strap over his ears. And thank God for the rose bush, because that's what broke his fall. And he weren't hurt too bad, except for a few thorns and his pride. I mean, he was butt-ass sitting and had to be pulled out of the bush. A few girls were there when he came crashing through the window, and they were giggling when they pulled him free, but Uncle Benny denied it was him. He said it was Uncle Bernie. But it makes no difference more than a flea's on a hind. It's still one hell of a passage of rite. I guess if I was best make you understand, it's like when a little girl wears her first training bra. I mean, a mother or a grandmother got to tell her about the flopping stopping, and that's a simple, similar passage. Yowie girl said, "Did I ever tell you sometimes you're a dumbbell?" I said, "No, not really, just when I'm asked dumb questions." All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you, and I'll see you guys next week.